Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of Our Voices, Our Community. Each week, we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss social, political, and economic issues, but also arts and culture and many more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Roanoke, the New River Valley, and Southwest Virginia. Today, we are joined by Will Solari and Karen Jones. Karen Cobb and Catherine Stromberg and Jose Banuelos are away this week. How are you guys doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah? Doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Will? Yeah. Well, Will, you're doing all sorts of things today. You're our engineer. You have the soundboard going, and we appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, switching up a little bit.
Huh?
Switching it up a little bit. Yeah,
well, I'm gonna start calling. Like I said, I'm gonna call you Jam Master Jay. I
don't know where
to see it. Okay, we'll work on that.
That's a high bar you just set, though.
I set a high bar. Oh, well, that's all right. I think you can do it. So, well, let's dive into today's discussion. We're going to be talking about elections to 2019, and who are we voting for? Locally in Roanoke County, Montgomery County, and Salem, we have the Board of Supervisors, the school board, council members, and other constitutional officers running statewide, and every delegate and every senator will be elected or reelected this year in November. So this is very important, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Just a little bit. So I know there's a list of people who are running for positions, but Karen, do you have all the ones that are running in our area?
Yeah, so between all of our localities, but I'm going to highlight our delegates and senators, because those are really important. I know everybody knows in Virginia, every year is an election year. So this year is really no important than last year, but it's important that we know what's happening. So in our area locally, we know that in our Senate races, we have Senator Edwards, who I believe is running unopposed. There is no one running against him.
As far as I've seen, no.
Yeah.
I thought, wouldn't a Republican...
As we say that, yes. I do believe there may be an independent or someone that's jumped in the race. I'll have to double check on that. But Senator Edwards, who is running, and he represents Roanoke City and parts of Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. Delegate Razul, who represents all of the city of Roanoke, he is 100% running unopposed. And then some other local elections that we have. Delegate Chris Hurst, who represents Radford, parts of Montgomery County, and Pulaski. He is running again as a Democrat. And a newcomer, Forrest Height, is running as the Republican in that race. Then we also have Delegate Rush, who's the incumbent. He has an opponent this year. Her name is Rhonda Seltz. What's really exciting is we have a lot of women running this year, so I like that. So Delegate Rush and Rhonda Seltz. Then we also have Delegate Joe McNamara, who, if you guys remember, there was a special election last year where Delegate Greg Habib stepped down. We had a special election. Joe McNamara won that race. So he is up for re-election.
And that's Roanoke County, is that right?
Yes, it's Roanoke County, parts of Montgomery County.
Okay.
And his opponent, her name is Darlene Lewis, and she's running as a Democrat. And so she's a newcomer. I don't think she's ran before, but I'm really excited to see what that race is going to look like between the two of them. We also have other Senate race, Senator Sudelon, who represents a huge area. I'm just going to say that. His area is pretty big, and we can talk about gerrymandering all day.
I was going to say, huge area is just another way of saying gerrymandered.
Yeah, exactly.
But his opponent, Flo Kettner, she actually last year ran for a delegate seat and is this year running for Senate. She's a pretty exciting candidate. I like her a lot. And we also have Senator Ben Chafin, and at this moment, who is running against him has just escaped me. It'll come back to me and I'll fill you guys in, but these are really important elections. You guys know, like, even last year when we had the delegate races, didn't somebody win by a coin toss? They pulled straws?
It was one area, and that actually shift.
It was over in Norfolk, right?
Yeah.
Was that the seat where it kept going to like rule after
yeah.
more crazy digging, like end of chapter 80 and then into chapter 110, like to find out what we do after this, after this, after this, after this.
Right. And then it comes to a coin toss.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And honestly, that illustrates the whole point that every vote counts. When people think that it doesn't, I mean, there's a clear, you know, illustration of that. But those are some of our Senate and delegate races. But then locally, and for me, local is so important. We have a lot of races in Montgomery County, Pulaski, the city of Radford, Roanoke County, and we have Board of Supervisors, school boards, Commissioner of Revenue, Commonwealth Attorney, Sheriff. All of these races are really, really important. But one I wanted to bring to you all's attention that I never knew about, and I feel like I'm pretty up on what's happening, is the Soil and Water Conservation Director.
What? What are you talking about?
Yes, and I'm assuming it has to do with soil and water.
Well, absolutely. I think that might be the right title.
I think it's a pretty clear position.
Is it clear what it does?
It wasn't clear. I'm just surprised that we're actually voting on this.
I mean,
environment's important.
Yes,
absolutely.
It's important. So
yes.
I guess they're trying to make the position important. It's in Montgomery County. Yeah.
Well, and given everything that's going on with the pipeline.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah, you can't even trust the people you think you can trust to appoint those kind of positions.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, despite all our governor's shortcomings, I at least thought he would be on our side about the environment, which isn't quite the case. And so I think it's exciting when you can actually vote for someone like this for a thing that does involve, mm-hmm. you know, the protection of our environment
mm-hmm.
and making decisions about, you know, things that will impact us. Because, I mean, what is it right now that MVP is talking about that they... they've made land uninhabitable and it can't work and is unsafe. Like in their own words, the people who are like, no, this is all fine. They're like, yeah, we really screwed up.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad. And when you look how it affects all of our drinking water, because they are, you know, ruining my part of the country in Montgomery County and Giles and Elliston, it's going to affect
really
everybody's drinking.
Yeah. Ruining what's here mm-hmm. for a thing that won't bring jobs. That is a result of fracking in West Virginia, right?
Yes.
So, like, every inch of this thing's bad, mm-hmm. but yet, here we are. And again, I think that's why it's important. Soil and water conservation, I don't know for a fact that they would, you know, could put the Red Family Feud X across MVP, but I hope so. And again, but it illustrates to your point, like how important it is to vote.
Yes, because honestly, if I kind of wasn't brushing up today, I would have gotten into the election booth and said, oh my gosh, what is this?
But don't we do that sometimes? Every time there's an election, we go into the polls and we'll see mm-hmm. Positions that we like, what the hell? I didn't know who they're running for.
Yeah.
And you just check. And usually, and typically people check along party lines, which is interesting. But I think people need to be more informed before they make a decision, regardless if they're Democrat or Republican.
Right.
But these positions are independent.
Yes, what happens a lot of time with local elections, particularly school boards and town councils, they don't run as a party, right? Mm-hmm. They tend to always run as independents. Now, you may know where they align based on who they run with, right? Like,
oh, for sure.
Where you can look and see where signs are, because it's very rare that you see a cluster of Democrat and Republican signs, right? They're usually Democrats and Republicans, even though you're running as an independent. But it's really important to know where they stand. For example, in Montgomery County, when we look at our Board of Supervisors, you know, they hold the purse strings to our school board budget, right? And we're working on, we need to build new schools or renovate them. We also have issues with teachers' pay, although this year they did get a raise, and I'm like so thankful and grateful for that because it's really important. But these local issues are the most important, I think, because they really do affect our pocketbooks.
Right.
Every day.
Well, and I think that's one thing people neglect to realize about local elections, too. You know, everybody gets ready for the Super Bowl in November. You know, who's going to be president? Who's going to mm-hmm. be senator? And really, those are important. And, you know, those representatives do tackle important issues. But, you know, I'd say, 60% of your life, easily, if not more, is determined by state and local government. Mm-hmm. And people just kind of sleep through those elections. I mean, Robert, I'm sure you can speak to this. I mean, the amount of turnout for city council
was atrocious.
Yeah, based on, you know, what it's like.
Based on the total number, it was atrocious.
Yeah, we get maybe what? On a record year, we get 10,000 people out over 100,000 people.
Yeah, it's a tenth.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. For people to actually say who's going to be in charge mm-hmm. of our city.
Yep.
I mean, it's kind of sad. But why? I mean, why is that? I mean, why for the low turnout? Is it because of the date, or is it? Does people really care? I mean,
yeah, and I know a little bit about this, but I mean, there has been a lot of push to move elections. Mm-hmm. State and local elections to November, because people are going out then anyways, right?
Right.
That that overlap of the people who are genuinely interested, and the national elections will mm-hmm. be there then to make those kind of decisions for mm-hmm. Local ones as well. But you know, the issue gets back to kind of what you were saying about the Soil and Water Commission. How many people, if they're just there to vote on who's going to be president of the United States, are familiar with what's going on locally?
Right. And I think too, so we established Election Day eons and eons ago, right? To be the first Tuesday, you know, in November, and having it on an opposite day is hard for people, right? Having it on a different day outside of the day that we are used to makes it difficult. But I also think in terms of being able to vote, whether it's in November or in May, is that I think Election Day should be a holiday, personally. I think people should be able to go vote. And I know polls are open from like 6 to 8 or whatever long period of time. But for the average working person to be able to get off of work or making sure their children are at school, like all of these things that you have to do, why isn't Election Day a holiday?
Now, let me be the devil's advocate for this, because, I mean, you know, we set national holidays, and that's the time for people to go off, to take off, to do things. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, you know, we set, for example, Martin Luther King Day. We it's a holiday. We're supposed to embrace and remembering the struggles through civil rights and things like that. But people go skiing on the weekend. I mean, really.
Sure.
I'm just trying to be.
True.
I'm just being real here. I mean, they go skiing, or they'll make it a 3-day holiday, and not really think about what the reason is for the holiday. And so, having a holiday for Election Day, is that another day for people to just?
Well, it's marketing, right?
Huh?
You know, I think it comes down to marketing, in a sense. You know, I respect people's right to abstain from voting, and decide that
you
they don't want to vote.
You believe that?
Well,
should?
I mean, I think they should have the right to do that. I don't. I personally think it's. I mean, I believe in their right to do that. I think it's ludicrous to do that, because then lots of those people complain. You know.
Right. Okay.
At the same time, though. You know, that's your right as a citizen. But the marketing aspect, though, I think comes in. One of my best friends loves elections, any election, because he goes out and he waits in line with people and he talks to them and he goes, you know, hello, citizen, and shakes their hand for participating in democracy. You know, and right. I think if we made it a show of that, if we made it kind of an awareness campaign about really what voting entails, what it took to get here, mm-hmm. what it means to be able to participate and your government, whether you're jaded about it, whether you're the most patriotic human on earth or whatever else, I think it's a great exercise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to brand it as such, you know, as to say, yeah, you know what? November is, or what, November 11th? What's the, I'm sorry, what's
this year? It's the 5th.
November 5th.
5th, yeah.
Yeah, November 5th, 2019.
That's
it's
the
on.
Day.
Yeah, like,
yes.
And it's great. Like, get everybody excited, you know, get everybody out there. You know, do more by the city can do things. Every locality can do things to promote that. Because that's really what being an engaged citizen, it's the minimum thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I think if you did that, then there would be more focus on the different candidates. I think he would have more parties. I think he would know, you know, are you an independent because you're leaning more towards being a socialist and a Democrat? Or are you an independent because it's hard to get elected as a Republican in the city of Roanoke? You know what I mean? There's, you could differentiate those lines and understand candidates a little bit better. Yeah. Well, and again, because the candidates are important.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's kind of a nice segue. We talk about local elections in November. There are talks and ideas, and I don't know as far as how forward we have moved, how much forward has been moving ahead, but there's talks about moving the local elections in the city of Roanoke to November. I mean, we talked about voter turnout. I mean, do you think, obviously, just that simple move would increase voter turnout, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also from a economic standpoint, though, right? Because, like I said before, there's an election every year in Virginia. So if you have to set up for two elections a year, or two elections every other year, because I don't think we have city elections every year, economically, it makes sense to vote all on the same day. But 100%, I think participation would increase, because we automatically know that on presidential years, more people come out to vote, which is really important. But we set people up to understand when it's happening. It's easier to inform people. I mean, I work with a lot of organizations that on a nonpartisan basis, we spend time trying to educate and offering opportunities for people to meet candidates, understand what their issues are, knowing whether they line up with you, whether it's from your political beliefs, your moral beliefs, or whatever that is. It just gives more time for people to be able to do that. And then you can see who those candidates line up with, right? Because if you're running as an independent, but, you know, you really are a Republican, people are able to see that. But I also think, too, sometimes, particularly in local elections, and I'm 100% guilty of this, I vote for people because I always knew them.
Right.
And that's not cool sometimes.
Well, here's the question. You bring up something, Karen, about the independent. You know, if the city of Roanoke is historically Democratic city, this move now moving to November is definitely going to increase the possibility of having more Democrats voting in the election, because we have more Democrats in the city of Roanoke.
No, sure.
So what is the status of the independent voter? Someone who runs the run as an independent. It sounds like to me there's no shot in hell that they're going to actually win if we have a Democratic city.
I mean, it's, you never know. I mean, that's the thing, but you never know until you do it. And again, whether they're a party that I completely identify with, whether they're a party that I have nothing in common with, I think that it's important that people are represented. You know, whatever your belief is, I could hate it, I could love it. I can't be mad about it if people are actually out there, you know, voting with what their beliefs and their hearts and whatever else. To rig a system, whether it's towards an outcome that I favor or towards, you know, when I don't, I think, you know, it becomes troubling. Because then how can you say that I'm better than, you know, that the people who, you know, rig voting machines, or say that voting machines are rigged, or that, you know, participate in really kind of dirty politics, or try to suppress votes or whatever else. You know, if I'm taking advantage of a system, it's still taking advantage of something, even if it is towards the greater good. And so I do like the idea, even if it is 1,000 parties, and if we have to wade through a bunch of candidates and whatever else. As long as people are being fairly represented, I'm in favor of it.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess the question that we need to ask is, why vote? You know, if they're going to move election dates and to possibly to November, I don't know if they're going to make a decision on it for 2020. Usually, you know, based on my history of local government, they'll wait to the last minute.
Sure.
Yeah.
Although 2020 would be a good year to do it.
2020 would be the best year to do it.
Well, yes, because then there's a certain individual in the Oval Office that we can all gavel round the troops and gather the troops.
Yeah, after it, last week especially, I was going to do my best not to speak its name.
Yeah, you know, he who remains unspoken. Okay, yeah, exactly.
Lord Voldemort.
Lord.
I keep thinking about Voldemort. Like, I'm glad you said that, because I'm always like, that when you don't say his name, that's what gives him power. That's what gave Voldemort his power.
That's right.
Is that what it is? Yes, because they wouldn't speak his name. And then as soon as they got the gumption to speak it, they were no longer afraid and they could defeat him.
Yeah, except that other guy has Twitter instead of magic and white nationalist.
So. Okay. I'm going to be ignorant on this. I know my kids know the story of Harry Potter. I'm not as up to speed with you guys.
I heart Harry Potter.
Okay, I'm sorry. But really, what are the reasons why we need to vote? This coming election, even this election, and also for 2020. I know we talk about the person who will remain, we will not speak on, but what about for 2019? What are the reasons why we need to get people out to vote?
You know, I think that the biggest thing is everyone deserves to be represented by someone who represents their community, mm-hmm. right? Some of the big issues right now, particularly from a statewide, we're looking at gerrymandering. And my biggest example, I live in Montgomery County. We have three delegates and three senators. And I love Montgomery County. I love Christiansburg. It's really the best place to live. But really? I digress. It is. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Right. Everything's beautiful, too. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Right. But for my county, for us to have three senators and three delegates, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. And I don't care whether my delegate is Republican or Democrat. I want that person to be from my community that really, you know, understands me. But gerrymandering is a huge issue across the state. We know that for sure. We also are looking at still the ERA is important, right? We still want to get that ratified.
Once the ERA is ratified in the state of Virginia, is that the tipping?
Then 38. We need 38 states, and then it becomes a constitutional amendment.
Okay, so we're at 37 now.
We're at 37.
Okay.
Well, and if you think about it like this, too, I mean, just a very simple way of putting, you know, what Karen was saying, you know, you find people who represent your values. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, so you can know what to expect. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it is the Equal Rights Amendment, whether, you know, for me, it was a skate park. You know, we have a city manager who has a lot of power, and that's good. But, you know, city manager and Parks and Rec, we had different ideas about a skate park. But the people in council, you know, who I voted for and who are servants of the community had a different idea. And so that's the kind of importance of those things. You know, if you want to see a more progressive society, you vote for, you know, politicians with progressive values. You know, if you want to see more conservative change, then do that too. But that's, you know, that's the only way you can see that change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then it's people that you really know, right?
Absolutely.
Because like for me, I'm represented from the delegate standpoint. Currently, Joe McNamara is my delegate. Because he just represents this really tiny piece of Montgomery County. And I'm not going to say that's not important to him, but that's not where the bulk of his voters come from, right? Because it's not that many people. So he doesn't know my community in the same way that even Delegate Rush and Chris Hurst, who live in Montgomery County, they really understand who we are. Now, whether I agree with either one of them 100% of the time, I think is neither here nor there.
Right.
But I know I can walk into Wade's and see either one of them and have a conversation with them about what's happening.
You don't see McNamara in Wade's?
I've never seen him in Wade's. And I would encourage him to go to Wade's because everything about Wade's is great.
Well, and I would remind people in this area to remember the lesson of Bob Goodlatte. Mm. You know, if we want to talk about an extremely like gerrymandered district where someone can remain in power forever, I gotta remember just week. So I guess back when Bush was running the first time, mm-hmm. I voted in that primary to vote against him just after hearing him speak a couple times because I was like, oh God. So I got on this Republican mailing list so I would get all of Bob Goodlatte's mailers. And it just blew my mind that he represents this district that includes Roanoke City and includes a kind of a pretty diverse population, but 90% of the mailers I got from him were about Obama. And you would have thought that Bob Goodlatte was running against Barack Obama, the amount of time and focus that he put onto this person. And it's crazy because, again, that doesn't really represent the values of the people he represents, whether it's in the rural districts or in the city. And it was just a waste of everyone's time. So, you know, in most people's interactions with him are the same way. They didn't see him out at Kroger and were like, hey, Bob, you know, what's up with that mailer? Those conversations couldn't happen because he was busy being the GOP, you know, witch hunt or, you know, what's the Grand Inquisitor, you know, like. And wasting everyone's time and government money. And, you know, it was just, that's one of those things. Like, that's why it is important. Gerrymandering is super important, but it's also important to have someone who's accessible. Because if they're not hearing the people in their community, they have their special interest in their ear.
Right.
Well, you have several issues that's going to be impacting us. I mean, we have gun control, legislature. You mentioned the ERA, women reproductive rights. And we talked about gerrymandering, equal pay.
Equal pay
statewide. Taxes, building new schools, teacher pay. I definitely believe teachers should be paid more. And also economic development as well. So there are a lot of issues here. Now, let me ask this question to the both of you. Being a working class, sometimes I feel when I look at my wallet, I'm a part of the working class. But the minimum wage worker who, you know, working maybe two or three jobs a week or shifting even daily on a daily basis, why would they want to vote? I mean, truly. I mean, you know, they are not going to have access sometimes to a lot of information, even to this podcast.
Sure.
But just want to hear your thoughts on what could we do for that class of people to really see the importance of coming out to vote.
Well, I think when you talk about the service industry, people who are making minimum wage that live on tips, that have jobs that are often prohibitive from just being able to go, hey boss, I'm going to go vote, and your manager is going, hey, all right. You know, I think it's important, again, as engaged citizens, as active voters, as people who are engaged and are paying attention, to consider those things. You know, who benefits really from a lot of the policies that do take advantage of class, that do take advantage of tax loopholes, whatever else? It's not to help people usually. It's to help a very small group of people. Mm-hmm. And this broad service industry, this broad, you know, working class, you know, just gets swept under the rug. And I think that, you know, again, as engaged voters, it's important to consider everybody. You know, I mean, it's a hard thing to do. It's like, you know, it's like love your enemy sometimes. You know, I don't know if I, you know, agree with this or want that, but, you know, if that's right for that person or this is whatever that, then do it. And it's the same with that, you know, it's all about power in the end, right?
Yes.
And there's a reason that the person who is running the factory making most of the money is making it hard for the factory worker to go vote. And whether that's an intended thing or it's an, you know, unexpected, you know, beneficiary kind of result for them, that happens. And so, again, you know, you get, as the people who are hearing this podcast, as the people who do actively follow politics, the people who are engaged in this process, you know, don't leave people out.
Yeah. I think it's also part of our responsibility, and I certainly think it's my responsibility to do as much as I can to provide information to voters, and provide it in a way that they see how it actually really does affect their life daily. But more than providing the information, giving them the resources that they can go vote. Right. Because there are so many barriers to that.
Yeah, like transportation.
Transportation is a huge issue. And so how can we make sure if they want to vote, they can vote? I think that's really important.
I think on election day, or either they make a decision on either the month of May or in November, I think there should be free bus rides Each election. Free bus rides. To the polls.
Free public transportation.
Public transportation on those days. I think that's important. So everyone has access to get to the polls and vote.
Well, and then you could, you know, again, if you decided to go down this road where you make Election Day a national holiday, it's easy to say then, look, there are going to have to be support people in place, whether it's people working the polls, whether it's people working public transportation in this example. We could say, yeah, you have early voting for those guys. People who have these jobs at whatever else, make early voting easier. And get rid of any kind of prohibitive thing that makes it hard to vote.
I wonder, could we make a city ordinance? I might be wrong totally, my ignorance, but couldn't we make a city ordinance on Election Day that...
Well, Virginia's a right to work place, right? So there's a lot of like hairy kind of stuff around that.
Yeah, but a couple of things, or at least one piece of legislation that passed in the last legislative session was to kind of loosen some of the requirements for absentee voting. Now, it didn't go as far as I would want it to go because I don't think there should be, I don't think I should have to really give a reason to vote early, but... now, a week prior to Election Day, there's no excuse absentee voting, right? So you can go and you can vote any day. I think it starts like the Saturday before. It's 7 days prior to Election Day. Mm-hmm. So there's no excuse absentee voting, right? And I think it's really important that we begin to let people know that, because for many of us, and I know when I used to work retail, you could walk into New River Valley Mall and you could come at 10 and see me at Lady Foot Locker, but then maybe at 3:30 I'd be at Foot Locker, and then maybe by 7 I'd be at Disc Jockey, right? So there's a lot of people that work a lot of jobs, and with no excuse absentee voting, then you can vote any of those days. It's important that we let people know that, because they don't, because Virginia is pretty restrictive in that. Now, prior to that, you have to apply for an absentee ballot, but making sure that people know what's available. But I don't think localities can make those changes on their own, right? That has to come from our state government, which is why who we have in office as our delegate and our senator is really, really important too.
What about the impact of millennials? Right now the perception, I don't know if it's reality, the perception of millennials voting is close to almost non-existent.
Sure.
In a lot of ways.
Well, again, it's like it's the parable of climate change deniers. You don't want to be that person who is damaging generations of people, and because you won't be affected by something. Mm. You know, again, I urge everyone to vote. I think I'm just sort of a baseline sort of vendetta, like kind of not, I wouldn't say angry person, but like I want justice in the world. Yeah. And I feel like that as someone who is, you know, like I said, when I was 19, I was voting in the Republican primary just because I was that against George W. Bush. You can't expect everyone to be that actively engaged, but I think if you did make steps towards, again, making voting less prohibited and sort of, again, in a social context, you know, that post offices have that section that's set up for passports. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't we have city buildings, whatever buildings that are just designed for voting whenever you can, or making a thing out of it, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a library or any kind of public building or facility. Mm-hmm. I think those kind of things would help with that, because then you don't really have an excuse anymore. Mm-hmm. You're like, I was walking by the voting booth anyways. Might as well just go in and do my thing.
Stop and do it. But I like what you said, just talking about why you voted. I remember in the second grade, our teacher, Ms. Daly, it was a gubernatorial election. I'll never forget this.
Were you allowed to vote at that time?
In the second grade, I was allowed to vote. Oh, wow. We voted in
there's
the second
some new
grade.
Laws coming
and I don't know who the opponent was, but this is when Chuck Robb was running for governor, right?
I remember Chuck
and,
Robb.
And we voted second grade. My class voted. Chuck Robb won the election. Right in my class, and then he won the election that night, and I thought, how cool is that? I just voted for Chuck Robb. Like, I'm 7 years old and I'm already excited about that. Then my actual first real election was for presidential election, Bill Clinton. And I remember my dad, because I was going to Radford, and my dad, when he got off work, he came and picked me up so I could go vote. Like, it was just this really big deal, right? It was like this rite of passage. Now I get to vote. I don't think we kind of instill that type of thing in our children anymore, right? Which is why there's, I think, a lot of apathy when it comes to voting, because I can talk all day long about how everyone fought for me to have the right to vote. But if I don't feel it, like if it's not something that's kind of ingrained in me, I think it makes it sometimes harder. Like you should have that excitement, that zeal to
vote. I think we get back to marketing. I get my friend Jacob, well done, citizen. Thank you, citizen. Good work, citizen. Yeah. You know, like it's fun then. Like me, another buddy of mine, Bo, like we would wait in lines in Austin for hours to vote. Mm-hmm. And it was this perfect opportunity for us to like practice like comedy just a little louder than we probably should have, just to kind of test audiences, because you're stuck there with them forever.
Right.
And it was great. Like, I think as long as you are talking to people and having this conversation that isn't just like, voter, you shut your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's not going to get anyone in the door. Mm-hmm. But again, I think if you talk about how fun voting is, even if it is like, oh God, well, it's a, we only had to choose between these two people who I don't really agree with, but like, whatever, like the process is important. And the process is can be something like enjoyable and interesting, provided you go into it with the right mindset. And I think a lot of these kids, you know, they grow up, you know, with boomers or parents like millennials and whatever else. And of course they have a bleak,
right?
Like, you know, there's nothing really
impacting them. I mean, I think on, especially on the national level, I think that a lot of millennials are seeing people, other millennials, either getting, unfortunately, getting shot. They're seeing the mass murders. Sure. They're seeing things that are really impacting them. And I think in some ways it is waking some of them up. I see certain pockets of millennials really becoming activists, understanding that this is their time, this is their country, and they what they're seeing right now is something that they do not like.
Well, sure, and to play devil's advocate, like you said earlier, these are a lot of people who have grown up going, oh man, you know, for myself, I'm not millennial, but I'm right on that cusp. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in high school when Columbine happened. Did we make any change any laws? No. I was around for Timothy Veigh and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It took 15 years for them to create new laws about, or I'm saying 15, but it was somewhere in that ballpark, about changing how much, I don't know, dangerous chemicals you can buy and store. Like, you know, it's, I think a lot of those kids have been beaten down. Mm-hmm. And again, it will change, but I think they have to wait. I literally think that most millennials are waiting for the old guard to die off.
Well,
think they can see any change.
Yeah, the old guard needs to.
The old guard means us.
I do think.
I'm not going anywhere no time.
Right. Well, but I do think that old money. But I do think there does come a point where there are generational shifts, and kind of your positions change or they stay the same. And when you're at a point where you're staying exactly the same as you were in 1952, and this is 2019, it's probably time to step aside. I think also that we need to stop always showing deference to someone just because they've been in office for 1,000 years and we wait our time. Well, I'm sorry, sometimes your time is right now.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, and you kind of see those now. You see those birthing pangs right now with like the squad.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay for there to be a new Democratic Party that does it something different than the way that you did it.
Absolutely.
And those things are encouraging, you know, but I really, you know, it used to be, I think, in politics, at least I felt like when I was younger, or I was the age that millennials are now, that you had this idea that like big business and politics were sort of in bed together, and maybe you heard a murder somewhere in the mansion that you were in, but you couldn't quite say, you know, who it was. And now it's just like big business and politics, like killing people in front of you, and you're like, oh, well, and no one's doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. You know, the Waltons make like $4 million a minute. I think that was the figure that came out recently.
Oh, wow.
And like, why? Who needs that much power? And we're like, well, corporate tax laws are way out of control. Are they?
Right. Are they?
When you're making $4 million a minute.
Right.
Are they out of control? Or someone rigged a system so heavily in their favor and ruined enough communities that they are then allowed to make this money without any kind of recourse tax-wise or societally speaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we forget that what benefits one benefits all, right?
Yeah.
Or at least it should. And if we are hurting others, then at the end of the day, we're also hurting ourselves.
Sure.
And I think we really need to think about that. It's interesting, as you talk about the Waltons, I've been watching the series, The Food That Built America.
You know what? I saw you post that, and I actually saw a little bit of that.
So good.
It was in the middle of my CHOP segment. Oh. You know, CHOP was on the food show, so I always have to watch CHOP. I'm sorry, but I did switch, and it was talking about Hershey's and Mars.
But I was fascinated by it. There was a series before about the men who built America, and they were talking about the Carnegies and all those people. Mm. But this focused on, like, food and the changing of innovation. But I was most struck by, what's his name now? I forgot his name, that started the Hershey Company.
Well, his last name was Hershey. I thought you were talking about
Milton Hershey.
Milton Hershey.
Yeah. So his whole, first of all, the drive that it took to create the chocolate, I thought was amazing. But he didn't do just that. He wanted to build a whole community, right? So he built the town, and his mindset was, if the workers are happy, they're going to work better. So instead of building like these shanty towns that you would see, particularly like when the railroad would go through and they'd build these towns.
Coal mining communities and that kind of stuff,
Milton Hershey really wanted the town to be a place where people could thrive and wanted to continue to build community. And he did that kind of throughout his life and even today, because he, you know, set his foundation and all that stuff. And what struck me was that it wasn't about him. Like, in all of that, it was about, how do I build my community? And if they're winning, then I'm winning. The same way, which is why I wanted a Milky Way last night, if you saw my Facebook. You know, the person that was in charge kind of wanted to stop the Mars people. But Milton Hershey was like, no, let's give them a shot. We'll take a little bit of the profits. But what he did was help to build another company. And so he was able to reach back and pull someone else forward, which I just found amazing.
Well, he made a lot of money doing that, too.
Yes.
You know, the fact that they was talking about cornflakes woke me up when CW Post. I'm sorry. I got deferred in my conversation.
Well, then that's another, I think, important aspect about voting, too, that we sometimes forget, is that you vote with your dollar.
100%.
You know, all these people are like, well, and it's again, it's back to what we were talking about last week with cognitive dissonance. Well, you know, I very much believe in the Bible, and I very much believe that everybody needs to be treated equally and whatever, but I just can't stop buying Chick-fil-A.
Oh,
really?
Wow, yeah.
Do you really hold all those Christian values that Chick-fil-A, you know, sells you one?
Right.
Because, you know, that makes it okay? Like, no.
But that's why I don't shop Hobby Lobby.
Sure. And again, I think that's an important thing, too, is voting really doesn't, and maybe this is part of our big, you know, get out and vote day.
Yeah.
Voting doesn't start and stop with you entering a poll and exiting a poll. It starts with your participation in local groups, mm-hmm. community organizations, your local parties, and again, right down to where you spend your money every day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, it sounds like that... I'm looking forward to this election because I think it's critical, mm-hmm. Especially with a lot of the topics and areas that we just mentioned before, that's going to make decisions in our state. So I hope everyone goes out and really look at the candidates and really make a decision. Just vote. I mean, at the end of the day, show your voice by voting.
Mm-hmm. Know the issues.
Know the issues.
Know the issues and vote for the person that best represents you on the issues.
I agree. I agree totally. Hey, guys, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you guys talking about this subject today. And again, we're going to go back and talk about, what do you think you're going to see next this week? So I always like to start with ladies first. I try to be somewhat of a gentleman. So, Karen, you want to tell us what you looking forward to this week?
So this week, have a lot of, and it's interesting because we're talking about voting and elections today. And so doing a lot of planning and in reference to that. But kind of in the news, just kind of continuing to watch, we know that we just saw, a suicide in the jail, and nationally. And hopefully, not hopefully, that's probably the wrong word, but that may bring some awareness to what's happening all the time in our jail systems in terms of that. So wanting to hear how this conversation goes and how this investigation goes into Epstein's death, and then how will that trickle down and have people look a little more locally at some things that are happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Will?
You know, whether it's nationally or locally, I hope we don't kind of lose sight of El Paso and all the, mm-hmm. the mass shootings we've had recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to kind of what's happening with the Roanoke City Task Force on gun violence. And since we're also talking about it, I just want to say, you know, Catherine isn't here because, you know, mm-hmm. that task force and that meeting last night that she went to was something that's about violence within the city caused by guns. And, you know, whether you're for or against guns, it was supposed to be a forum where everyone could kind of talk well and speak their mind. And, you know, we could see a bunch of different sides of the story in a peaceful way or whatever else. And, you know, there are people there that got threatening with her. And that's basically why she's not here today. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to remember that regardless, again, it's like what we're talking about. Whether you believe in, you know, whatever, get out and vote. Do your mm-hmm. thing. Don't mm-hmm. bother people about it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're allowed to have a difference of opinion and you're allowed to be...
you don't need to be in a bullying position.
Absolutely. Bullying position. And especially if you're pro-gun, because I think this is the long-term effect of mass shootings and things like that. We're not calling them terrorist events, but you know, I'm sure that guy who approached Catherine after the meeting to tell her about how guns were never going to be taken away and this is a man's world and all that kind of crap, wasn't going to threaten her with a gun, but given everything that's going on lately,
mm-hmm.
A white male coming up to you in the parking lot at night, being aggressive with you about guns, that's the exact definition of the guy who shot up everybody in El Paso.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like in New York when they had that car backfire and everyone went running,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are just afraid now of guns.
Yeah.
And so, you know, be respectful and be mindful that, you know, that the people who maybe don't agree with you aren't the ones who are going to shoot you also.
Right.
So again, sorry for the long rant, but I'm looking forward to what comes of the kind of the task force and what they kind of start to enact and seeing what kind of progress and help that can make with the city.
Well, that's well said, my brother. Well said. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, again, you know, that particular task force is trying to help and serve our community and people who are, you know, I respect different opinions, you know, well, at least I try to.
Sure.
Different opinions, but I mean, that type of action is uncalled for. And so hopefully we can, Catherine, we'll see Catherine next week mm-hmm. and we wish her well. You know, this week, I don't really have anything particular. I know it's an issue that keeps going on in the neighborhood that I live is about the food deserts, the issue of food deserts. I mean, you know, I used to live in, and I hate referring to the place I used to live in Seattle, but that's the only reference I have. But when I was in Seattle, I can be at a grocery store in less than 2 minutes.
Sure.
In my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I live in Northwest, proud and was raised in the Northwest area. It takes me 10 minutes to get to a grocery store in a car. And it saddens me. I mean, that I have to go to the grocery store. And God forbid when I go to the grocery store and come home, if I forget something, my wife says, well, you know, you forgot the seasoning. I have to go back out.
Well, yes, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'm really concerned the fact that we, you know, the issue of food desert in our community, especially in the Northwest area, is still prevalent. I really don't see or hear anyone really having any active discussions mm-hmm. around it. But, you know, I don't know what we have to do to have this type of issue and or grocery store, talk about fresh produce. I'm not talking about a grocery store that you can get processed food,
sure,
and sodas and candy. I mean, we have those little stores all over the place, but I'm talking about a supermarket that has fresh produce, fresh foods, something nutritional for our community, and that's something to me. I hope that we can finally. Well, hope that we can eventually have some solutions around that area.
Have you seen, and again, voting with your dollar and applauding people who are doing good, have you seen where Goodwill, where their campus over there on Orange and Melrose, mm-hmm. is, they've started a community garden over there too?
Yeah. You know,
nice.
Yeah, they do. I've seen that, and I am on the board of Goodwill, so I've seen some of the great work they've done, especially regarding the immigrant population growing that, and that's something that we need to do. I would love to see each week having fresh fruit stand, produce stand in the neighborhood where people can just go get some and purchase fresh produce and things like that. That's something that my father did in Seattle. Bought land outside of Seattle, and you know, I think it was about 15 acres of land. And then brought fresh produce down mm-hmm. into the central area, the downtown area, where it's predominantly African American, and had a fruit and vegetable stand. Mm-hmm. And people just buy fresh produce. You know, I would love to see something.
Yeah,
like
I
that.
Love a gray market too.
Yeah.
And you know, they say food is medicine.
Right.
Exactly.
But you know, like every Saturday. Right now, and I'm not sure how long it lasts, but the community garden that's on Loudoun Avenue, I believe, Apple Ridge Farms has that. What is that?
NEO. It's with, yeah.
Yeah, NEO and Apple Ridge, so mm-hmm. they do have the fresh produce there. I also think there's somebody else does that as well, and I don't know if they do it every weekend when they do that, but with the Humble Hustle, Xavier's organization, I think they also do that, so... Mm-hmm. We need more of that.
And hopefully we can have the conversations of how we can merge all this mm-hmm. into something on a daily basis. I know this is more of a weekend type mm-hmm. thing, but more on a daily basis we can do things like mm-hmm. that. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to this week and maybe beyond that. So, again, thank you. I do want to make sure as we conclude that we really pay attention to the upcoming voter registration and voting deadlines. September 20th, 2019 is where the absentee voting begins. On October 15th is the deadline to register the vote. October 29th is the last day to apply for a mailed absentee ballot. November 2nd is the last day to apply for an in-person absentee ballot. And then, of course, on November 5th is Election Day. So I just want to make sure you have those dates down and make sure they're applicable to you. So thank you, you guys.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. And thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. You can also listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on WROE 95.7, Radio Free Roanoke. Yes. If you like what you heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you and have a blessed day.